And welcome into another edition of the B Squared Podcast, the last of the 2016 season, but certainly the happiest. With Brian Beto, I'm Jordan Bernfield, and the Chicago Cubs won the World Series. They are champions of baseball in 2016, ending the 108-year drought, and now stand atop the baseball world. Brian Beto, first of all, congratulations to you. Congratulations to Cub fans everywhere. Congratulations to the Chicago Cubs on their magical win. And I want to start with this. Where were you for Game 7, and what was the moment like for you when they won?
Well, congratulations to you as well on both of our sports peak. Total jubilation. I was in my basement watching at home with a couple of friends that are to the word true, like they are the diehards like I was. One I've known since college, and we would watch every game together. One I knew since I was about six, kind of live and die with every game sort of thing. My wife was here, the dog was here, and Sarah obviously has lived through this with me since we started dating in 2008, so she kind of got a whiff of what I was like pretty early on when the Cubs were good in 08 and how depressed I was when we lost. So I don't even know what I was doing. I remember we have like a sectional couch, and I was watching it from that spot in the corner of that sectional most of the game. And then I kind of remember like vaguely like standing on the couch, like in like the top of the 10th inning. Like I've never done that before. I don't remember getting into the standing position. And then I was like squatting. I don't know. I was just, it was like a sober blackout. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'd had a couple drinks, but it wasn't like, it wasn't because of that. I just was so locked in. And I just remember Sarah actually took video of the final out and kind of the reaction of the room and stuff like that. So we'll have that forever, which is pretty cool. But just kind of leaning back in utter like shock and total elation and jubilation and all those like, just sports peak type moments wrapped into one. And I mean, it was everything you wanted. So I mean, we'll dive into that throughout the course of this final podcast of the 2016 season. But you know, buddy, we started this in 2010. We've talked about this on the podcast and how crappy that team was and how we did a show every day. And we talked a lot about the minor leagues and looking forward. And this was during the last regime even. And what could they do to kind of build that culture that we've seen from some of the winning teams? And we found it. And we did brought the podcast back this year in hopes that we'd have the chance to do this specific podcast talking about the Cubs winning the World Series. Here we are. And it was 8 days ago. And I still feel like it was 5 minutes ago. I'm still kind of riding that sports high. And it was just everything. It was absolutely everything. What about you?
Yeah, I feel the same way. It was everything. It's funny you called it the sports peak. It is for me too. And I feel like now I will never be the same as a sports fan. I just feel like mm-hmm. I will never have a moment like what we had. And I had my family over and my fiance Deanna's family over, and we were watching it in our condo here in the city. And we ordered pizza in and whatever and had some drinks.
Right.
And I was so nervous during the game, even when the Cubs were winning, that I was pacing around the room like a wild man. And I kept, standing in different positions and whatever, thinking that it was somehow affecting the game. And I'm getting texts from friends when the Cubs are up, 5-1, like, oh, they got this. And I didn't even respond. You can't even entertain that kind of thought, especially as a Cub fan. It's just crazy that anyone would even send that to me.
It's like those texts Theo was getting.
Right.
People saying, congratulations. Like, what are you, nuts?
Right. It's not over till it's over. So I just, during the rain delay, I felt like I was able to breathe for a minute, like the Cubs evidently were. And even though Jason Hayward wasn't giving me the $184 million speech, I was in need of it, because the moment that Davis hit the home run off of Chapman was the first moment where I felt like they might lose. I still felt like they were going to win most of the time, but I thought it was so significant that they were never losing in that game. And then when Schwarber starts the 10th with the hit, and then Zobrist hits the double, and Montero hits the single, and they're winning. When it got to the bottom of the 10th, when Edwards gets the first two outs, I went over and stood next to my dad, because this is, you know, he is the one that made me a Cubs fan. He is the one that gave me the quote-unquote disease, and I wanted to be with him in the moment if they were going to win. And then when Edwards gives up the run, I'm now basically hyperventilating, thinking, are they going to blow this lead? But Mike Montgomery comes in and gets the out, and I think I lifted him almost over my head in jubilation. And, you know, I'm hugging my dad, I'm hugging my fiance, I'm hugging everyone in the room, my mom and Deanna's parents, and just everything. And it was just, it was everything. Like you said, it was everything. It was such a incredible rush of relief, of happiness, of unbridled joy. I shed some tears. I'm willing to admit that I did, and I'm not a crier. I honestly didn't cry fully, but there were tears coming out of my eyes for the first time in I can't even remember. And it was just such a beautiful thing to watch Rizzo catch that ball, lift his arms in the air, put the baseball in his back pocket, and then run to Chris Bryant, the two of them jumping on each other and the players storming out of the dugout, and just everything about it was just so great. And I agree, I'm still riding the high. I never went to sleep that Wednesday night because I ended up going to Wrigley to cover when the buses came back. And I didn't go to bed till 10 a.m. the next day. And it didn't even matter because I was so happy.
Yeah. And that was such a great point. You did a lot of what a lot of, like, you know, Cubs fans did and wanted to be around their family and people who got you started on the disease, as you called it. And I remember I went to my parents' house for game six to watch it there. And it was cool. My sister was there and brought the spouses and my nieces and nephews. And it was like my sister made a point, like, which I was obviously thinking throughout the night, is like, yeah, this is cool to watch a World Series game, kind of where it all started, in the place where we kind of got addicted, you know, like, but like collecting our my Sean Dunstan cards. Right. And, you know, I remember like being home in the summer when I was a little kid at that house that my parents still live in today, and checking the old TV guide, and I didn't know if the Cubs were on Channel 9, and I would turn 9 on and Maury was on because he couldn't just check the guide or anything like that. Right. And just, like, reminded me of that, like, kind of growing up, and had a chance to watch a World Series game there. Obviously, we were both privileged to go to at least one World Series game. I went to the kind of the bottom barrel of the series, but it didn't matter, you know, like, they lost 7-2 in game four, and it, just being there is unbelievable. And of course, now that they came back and won three straight, it doesn't matter. Like, just being able to say that I got to go to a Cubs World Series game, and I was fortunate enough to do that, and I'm sure you're feel the same way, was just unbelievable. And then it just the game seven itself, it was everything. So you know, when we were growing up and you hear the whole thing, like, oh, like, if the Cubs are ever going to win the World Series, it's going to be game seven, and like the asteroid's going to hit the earth, or there's going to be like the lights are going to go out.
We basically got that. We basically got that.
The rain delay happens, and I was after Davis hit the home run, I was like you. That was the first time I felt like, holy crap, we might not do it. Yeah. I wasn't saying it was over, but I felt like, holy crap, this might be it. But
right, because you, just to point this out, and I think our listeners know this, you are the eternal optimist. I have become more optimistic, and I think I was optimistic all season, legitimately optimistic, but I wasn't always this way. I think it's the more years I've lived out of my dad's house, the more optimistic I've become as a relationship. But honestly, and by the way, he's never been happier in his entire life. Like the last week, I don't even know who he is anymore. It's wonderful. I mean, he's so happy. It's incredible. But honestly, like, I wouldn't expect you to feel like they were going to lose. And honestly, I never felt like they were, because for the first batter of the game, if Fowler hits a home run the first batter of the game, you just had this feeling like Corey Kluber did not have the stuff that he had in game one. You could see he didn't have it. They never struck out. It was just a totally different feel to the game. Mm-hmm, but I the first time that the thought entered my mind that they might lose was when Davis hit that ball. Because Chapman, there were a lot of things that happened in that game that were questioned in terms of what Joe Maddon did as a manager, and I agree with questioning certain things, but in the end, he gets the ball to Aroldis Chapman with four outs to go, and that's probably what you would have wanted regardless. The fact of the matter is, Chapman did not do his job, which no one would have foreseen given how great Chapman was and how valuable Chapman was for the Cubs. Now, it turns out he was tired because of pitching in Game 6 and Game 5 and all that stuff, so it made sense. But in the moment of Game 7, I don't know how you felt. I just felt like, well, I didn't necessarily agree with taking out Hendricks when they did. I didn't necessarily agree with having Lester throw as many innings as he did. But in the end, they get the ball to the guy you want to have the ball with, four outs to win the World Series. So it just, the whole thing was insane, completely insane.
It really was. And I would, like, with you, I think, honestly, I kid you not, the time I was, you could ask Sarah this, she picked me up afterwards, but after Game 3, I think, was the most down I'd been. And we were only down 2-1, but I just was so frustrated with that 1-0
yes,
loss.
Me too.
And I was furious. And I just, like, was so angry. And we lose Game 4, and clearly that's a much worse situation to be in than down 2-1. But even after that, I was like, you know, maybe it's not likely that we come back and win, but I thought it was foolish to think that this team wasn't capable of doing so, given just the way this team has played all year and how many times they've rattled off 3 in a row, albeit against a really good team in Cleveland, a great team in Cleveland. But the pitching coming up and just kind of what happened, I'm like, let's just, you just win Sunday night, win Game 5, let's see what happens. They're able to hold on in just an incredibly intense game. Nail-biter down to the end. Game 6, you felt great with the pitching matchup. They get out to that huge lead. Cleveland has the misplay, and there's no real drama. Then we get to Game 7, and like you said, we had everything that we could have possibly imagined. We get to game. I felt like, to me, there was maybe about an inning and a half where I felt like we might not win. And it goes to the Davis home run. Then the Cubs get the opportunity, and obviously in the top of the ninth.
Right, they don't score, yeah.
They get Hayward on at third. They don't score. Then Chapman goes out for the bottom of the ninth. Has nothing in the tank, obviously. He somehow hangs a breaking ball to Santana, and it's a soft fly out to left. And then Kipnis hits one down the right field line that he probably should have gotten more of the barrel on a hanger. He somehow strikes him out with the fastball, and then he's able to get out of it in the bottom of the ninth to end the inning. And after he goes 1-2-3 in the bottom of the ninth, the rain delay comes. I calm down. I'm like, you know what? This is it. This is the year. They're going to do it. I have full faith, and you obviously don't know what's going to happen.
You,
like,
channeled the Jay Hay speech in your mind.
I did. I did channel it in my mind. It felt great. We started laughing at in this incredibly, the most intense sportswoman of my life, I started laughing when the rain delay happened because there was just no way you could potentially script what was happening, and it was real life.
Right.
And they go out, and Schwarber gets a single in the right field, and I'm like, this is it. Here we go. Like, I remember standing up and being like, all right. Like, all that crap that happened in the eighth inning, it's over. Like, let's score this run, and then when Zobrist ends up coming up with 2-1, you're thinking, like, yes, he's not the best hitter on the team, but honestly, like, just what he's been capable of and what he did with Kansas City the year before and the type of hitter he was, you just felt so confident.
I thought he was going to get a hit.
Find a way to deliver. Yeah. And he does down the left field line in a 1-2 pitch. Total elation. And once he got the hit and Montero singles through the left side, you just felt unbelievable going in the bottom of the 10th. And they were able to do it. And, of course, there was some drama that went along with it. But Mike Montgomery delivers two just picturesque curveballs over the outer half. Gets a weak ground ball off the bat of Michael Martinez. And I felt like Chris Bryant's face when he was fielding the ground ball kind of encapsulated the entire Cubs fan base. Like, kind of this, like, half smile, like, oh my God, we're about to do this. And then he delivers a strike to Rizzo, and then, you know, the rest is history. Everyone goes.
It was perfect. It was funny. I don't know if you saw Bryant on Jimmy Kimmel a couple of nights ago, but Kimmel was joking with Bryant that had he thrown that ball into the dugout, that it would have been like the worst reaction facially ever.
Because
he could have blown the World Series with a smile on his face as he throws the ball away.
Yeah.
It was really funny. And obviously the Cubs have been all over the national talk show circuit lately. Definitely. And it's honestly, the parade was – the parade and the rally were – everything that you could have imagined and more. It's like we always said that if the Cubs ever won the World Series, it'd be crazy to think about how many people might attend this thing. And I don't know how they come up with 5 million people. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what they use to calculate or project. I don't care. It was more people than I've ever seen ever at anything, obviously. I mean, it was crazy. Honestly, one of the things that was so amazing about it, and I don't know, you know, what the angles were like on TV, but what was amazing about it was that as you were going along Lakeshore Drive, there were people standing in the median between the inner and outer drive, lining the entire street so that they wouldn't get hit by a car, but that they could be close enough to the parade to see the Cubs. In the smallest of surface areas, it was literally filled shoe to shoe with people. And that was just as amazing to me as the masses of people along Michigan Avenue and into the side streets and all along Wrigleyville and around the ballpark and every side street in Wrigleyville and then obviously into Grant Park and Lower Hutchinson Field and all that. I've never seen so many people at anything. And the noise, it was so loud the whole way through. There were times where you couldn't even hear yourself. And it was just unreal. The entire experience, I think that's when it started to set in that the Cubs just won the World Series. When you're watching players on double-decker buses parade through the city with blue and red and white confetti streaming down and them holding up the commissioner's trophy. I mean, that image is so indelible. I will never leave my brain to have seen that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I was down there. I was not fortunate enough to get into the rally. They'd cut it off by that, like the actual like speeches at Grant Park.
And where were you watching from?
So I ended up watching the parade. I was on near Michigan Avenue. I got down there early enough to do that because we were trying to find a good angle. And then I ended up going to my friend was able to get us a table at, or like a decent table in front of a TV at Harry Carey's to watch perfect. Actual speeches from. So which was packed, which was a lot of fun. But I think I was joking around. It reminded me of, in a very, very different way, but the if you've seen the movie The Dark Knight Rises, when the world pretty much cuts themselves off from Gotham City and like people are just there's nothing else to do and it's just this big secluded area, I felt like Chicago was like that, but with just Cubs fans only. Like, it was only people that were Cubs fans that were in the entire loop. Like, right. There was nothing else mattered. Nothing else mattered in the loop, the South Loop, River North, anything like that. Everyone was wearing Cubs gear. The lines were out the door to every establishment. The streets were packed. Like, you couldn't drive on it. And it was, and it, for the most part, obviously, I'm sure there was some isolated incidents, but it was handled pretty well, a lot better than I anticipated, where, yeah, people were climbing on things and things like that, but it wasn't totally out of control. It was just a lot of people having, just celebrating the moment they've been waiting their whole lives for.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. And I, just going through the parade route, I was extremely fortunate to be on one of the buses covering this event. And it was, I mean, it was, I don't mean to, you know, sound like I'm so great or anything. I don't feel that way. I just got extremely lucky that I got to be on one of them. And I was with some of the players, and which was amazing. And just the looks on their faces, you know, I think that they couldn't even believe what they were watching and what they were experiencing. And it was blowing them away in a way that I felt was palpable on our bus. Just the size of the crowds, the noise, the elation, the entire experience was so wild. And just going through the route of the parade to see all these people just outpouring of support and happiness. And honestly, like, there's so many images that'll never leave my brain. One of them was when we came around, I was on a bus that started on Sheffield behind the ballpark. And as we came across Waveland and then onto Clark, where they were working on the plaza, there were some men and women up on scaffolding working on like the upper levels of that new plaza building. And yep. they were all lined up on the Clark Street side to wave to the players in their hard hats and everything. And the players were waving up at them like, thank you for what you're doing. And then, you know, these people waving were thanking the players back for winning the World Series. And it's like, those are the kind of images
right.
that show you how important this is to so many people. And then as we go along Lakeshore Drive and you see all these people lined up in the median, and then fathers and sons, mothers and daughters lined up like in the park over by the LaSalle Street Bridge that must have like either abandoned their cars or took the train down, or I don't even know how they got there because traffic was closed going both directions across Lakeshore Drive, that were lined up like at the edge of the street just waving at the players. And then as you get onto Michigan Avenue and you see the number of people that were like hanging out of windows and with W flags everywhere, and then the amount of people at Wacker and LaSalle, and how probably three blocks back it went with just people in blue and red and white, and then pulling up into Grant Park and just seeing the sea of humanity where there was no end. And it was just like, it was,
it's like what, did you hear what Dexter Fowler said on Fallon the other night? He said, you know, like speak at a conference, like you look out and you like, you see like, oh, the last row. He's like, you couldn't see an end.
No,
you basically could not see an end.
Right. I mean, where we were put as media, I was behind the stage where the players were before they went out for the rally. And then they had us go around the stage and we were kind of standing in the front on the side. And from where we were standing, I mean, obviously we weren't elevated like the players were on the stage, but you could not see the end. I mean, you could literally not see the end. So I get it. I mean, it was so many people in every direction that the only thing stopping the people was buildings eventually were there. You know what I mean? It was just like you didn't see where the end of the people were. And it just, that was crazy. And I just think that the whole moment, just the idea that, you know, that they estimate it was like the seventh largest gathering in human history and, you know, the most people that ever gathered for any event in America. And just like the idea of that, it just shows you how much this means and how different this is. And honestly, Beto, like what I think I'm going to remember about this whole experience, there's so many things, but if there's one sort of theme of the whole thing is how much this means to so many generations of people because of the uniqueness of them not winning for so long, that there's so many people connected to this team because they hadn't won, that the moment that they finally did, it was different than any other fan base because there were people in their 80s and people in their teens and people in their 40s that were all connected to this one thing, wanting to see this one thing finally happen. And the fact that it did put together such a jubilant party that it was truly unlike anything we'll probably ever see again in the city.
We won't. We'll never see anything like this again for the rest of our lives. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm 100% okay with it. We got our moment. Hopefully, I mean, this team's going to be around for a while. They're really good. And we'll get to that at some point. But what was so great about kind of what you said about how everyone's just been waiting for this moment and generations of people didn't get to see it and how important it was to so many different groups of people. You know what's cool about that, in addition to obviously them actually doing it and seeing the celebrations across the city and fans outside of the city and the state, is that the players knew it and they understood how important it was. And I guess it's kind of hard not to when you see all the national attention and the crowd and the fan base and all over the media and things like that. But at the same time, they wouldn't talk about it, and they wouldn't let that pressure kind of get in the way of what they were
the pleasure. They didn't want the pleasure.
Yeah, I was trying to see the pleasure. That cliche, but you'd hear like Addison Russell in a pregame or these press game or postgame conferences, and they'd be asked a question along those lines, and they'd say like, you know, we're really not thinking about that right now. We're trying to get, you know, and but they're saying that, and that's the right attitude to have. But you're crazy to think it was in the back of the mind that they'd love to be the team that actually went out and did it.
Right.
And they wouldn't let the burden of that 108-year drought kind of get in the way of what they were trying to do. They knew if they went out and performed, they would get they would celebrate the way they did. And I thought that was kind of cool, and they understood it. And just like the Anthony Rizzo, you know, they had David Ross Mike talking about how he was an emotional wreck. In the middle of the game when the Cubs had like a 5-1 lead in game 7, and everything was just unbelievable. And if we could take it back to the end of game 7 for a second, another point that I thought was really cool, and I had a friend that was fortunate enough to be in the locker room for the celebration after the game, and he said something like he was describing what was going on, and he said it was just mixes of people partying together like they'd known each other their entire lives. And it's the players who and their groups of friends, but then all the players' families and the coaches' families and everyone celebrating along just like I said, they'd known each other forever. And what one thing we've heard about this clubhouse, and Jordan, you've been in a minor league clubhouse, so yeah. I know it's different than a major league, but and you've obviously been in the major league clubhouse too, but when you follow a team, even at the minor league level, you understand that there's, I don't want to say segregation between the American born players and players from outside the country. They're friends and they're friendly and things like that, but it tends to be a little bit more clicky.
Yeah,
I feel
guys
like
guys huddle together a little more that they know yeah. that they're common with. Yeah.
There's a little
that.
Bit of a culture yeah. barrier, language barrier, things like that. But from everything we've heard about this team and what I've was echoed after Game 7 is that Joe Maddon did such a good job in making sure that wasn't the case. Sure, you have your best friends on the team and whatnot, but I heard there was just so much more unison with this team, which made the celebration part even cooler and everyone hanging out, things like that. And that was echoed to me during this Game 7 celebration. So that part was just awesome to see the family. I heard the families just got along together. And yeah. just thinking about that moment, like, holy crap, we actually did this. And they enjoyed it, and they were able to celebrate. They understood how much it meant to even people like us and our families and things like that, and people who weren't able to see this happen. So
yeah, I mean,
just incredible week.
Yeah, it's easy when you win to have chemistry, but this team certainly had it. I agree with you. They certainly had it. I think that David Ross and guys like Anthony Rizzo really bridged the language barrier and the gap and were able to bring it together. You know what I kept thinking while watching the rally is that Anthony Rizzo is the Cubs' Jonathan Toews. He just gets it. He gets what it means to these to Cub fans. He gets the organization. He gets the history. He gets the significance. And he truly cares about being a Chicago Cub in a way that, I mean, he really is the leader and the captain and the face of the Cubs, but he has a special appreciation for it and knows the right things to say in the right moment. And just what's cool is that he's kind of grown up in front of us and was the first name that started this rebuilding effort and was the first person that Theo and Jed identified as somebody that they wanted to be a big part of this thing. And I just feel like there's so many comparisons now that the Cubs are winners that you can make with Jonathan Toews. Like, I remember when the Blackhawks drafted Jonathan Toews and going to his first press conference when he was like this skinny 17-year-old kid, and then watching him sort of rise up the ranks in the NHL and eventually hoisting the Stanley Cup over his head, and to see now what he's become. Like, he's the face of the Blackhawks. He's the guy that was the unquestioned captain at age 21 or whatever it was, because he just had a special appreciation for what he was doing. And I think that listening to Rizzo after they won and the speech that he made and the way that he thanked David Ross and the way that he presented that baseball to Tom Ricketts and all the things that he's done, like, he is that guy for the Cubs franchise. And when you win, it's always easy to heap praise on people because they won and they accomplished.
Correct.
But I think what's
sure.
different about this is that you can see the evolution of leaders on this Cubs team the way I think that you see it with the Blackhawks. And I think that that's one of the ways in which I feel like it's not crazy, other than they have a lot of talent that's young and developing, to think that they can be a dynasty, because it you see these certain character traits in these guys that allow you to believe that they can continue to accomplish big things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And he's kind of the guy. He's been like the face. I hate, you know, using that cliche and figuring out who the face of the franchise is and whatnot. But like you said, he was the first player the Cubs identified, this front office identified, as someone that could be a building block of a potential championship team. And he goes out and I think obviously performs and kind of the vocal leader and just the way he's matured over the years. And outside of the obvious, them storming the field after the final out and Brian's face, just the image that will forever be ingrained of that game to me was when he made the turn, got to third base after Zobrist's double, put the Cubs up in the 10th, and he puts his hands on his helmet and just pointing at Zobrist, and he's just jaw dropped, and he eventually says, "Oh my God." Like, it was just the entire thing was like this is what I've been here for the last 5 years. And that moment and just that image is just always going to stand out to me. And you're right. He's going to be the guy that's around for a while, and everyone's going to kind of identify like the Blackhawks have, hopefully, with Jonathan Toews. Obviously, Toews has got a couple more on him, but this is the way it started for the Blackhawks in 2010. It starts with the Cubs in 2016. And one final point I'll kind of make about this, and before we get the slob fest over with,
they deserve it. They won the World Series.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm okay
with it. You're right. I don't want to talk about the Jason Hayward meeting per se. Like, we talk about meetings forever and kind of overblow that. I think the cool part to me about that is it's no secret. Everyone knows he had a bad year, obviously offensively. But I think it says a lot about him and his character to an extent that he still has that credibility to shape the locker room with something like that. Like, I mean, most guys, if they try to rally the troops when they had the crap year that he had and making the amount of money, I feel like you don't necessarily buy in. But I felt like that just him going out there and still have that sort of the credibility that originated with how he's perceived in the locker room and how people have lauded him. And I don't know if it mattered. I mean, the Cubs might probably maybe win that anyway if they don't have that sort of meeting in the locker room. I just thought that was a cool moment. And yeah, I know he didn't make the $884 million in that meeting. I just thought that was another thing that was that contributed to the moment and maybe adds to the narrative of the mystique and what was already the ultimate game seven.
Well, everyone has said that meeting really changed the game for the Cubs. And I'll say this. If you had told me, if we had been presented with the idea before the season that the Cubs would need to spend $184 million on a pep talk to win the World Series, Cubs would have spent it. They would have done it.
Done.
Right. So the point is, like, I don't think that can be undervalued. I know it sounds like easy narrative to say now that they won, but I mean, what a guy he is, really, to have, after having a terrible season offensively like he did. I mean, he did win the Gold Glove. He did obviously contribute in other ways. But from an offensive season, a really rough year, to be that guy in that moment to rally the troops, it's you know, it's stuff of legends. It's like the stuff that we're going to be talking about with our, you know, with our kids and grandkids years from now.
He got benched in the World Series.
Right, and still.
And he comes out, a great attitude. They still buy into his leadership, and he goes, and I totally agree. I would love to see him have a great year, but they won it, and he contributed at the end, and, you know, I'll tip my cap to him for that.
All right, so now we go into the offseason. The funny thing is, like, I remember the day after they won, I don't even remember. People were saying, like, well, what are they going to do next year? I'm like, I don't even care yet.
Yeah, like, I was like, what? Like, stop.
Yeah, like, they just won the World Series. Like, I mean, let's bask in this for a while. I mean, I have more basking to do, a lot more basking. But I think that there are obviously questions about next year. I don't think Aroldis Chapman's going to be back, given that, you know, there's reports he wants $100 million. I don't see the Cubs spending that on a reliever. Obviously, Jason Hamill is gone, and I thought it was really classy that he took out that ad in the paper to thank Cub fans. And I thought it was really classy of Theo and Jed not to exercise his option so he could get paid somewhere else. I think that, obviously, you know, it looks like Montgomery will be the guy that moves into the fifth spot in the rotation, which I think I'm okay with. That I think he's clearly proved that he's a valuable pitcher. It means probably Rob Z ends up in the Montgomery role unless they add a couple of more relievers, which I expect that they will. And listen, if Dexter Fowler is gone and they have to replace him in center field, whether that's with Jay Hay shifting over or Almora going to center or some, you know, finagling, because you obviously want to have Zobrist and Baez in the lineup as frequently as they can. Obviously, there are questions that will have to be answered in terms of massaging this roster a little bit, but at least as they go into 2017, four of the five starters that you used all year are back, and most of your lineup is back, and these guys are only, you figure, going to get better. And, oh, by the way, Babe Ruth Jr. is going to be back on the field for presumably most of the season next year, hoping that, you know, he's healthy again, which I assume that he will be by next spring. And I think that they're going to be in a great position to do it again.
Yeah, there'll be some tinkering here and there. You mentioned most of it already. And they're going to be the favorites heading into next year, barring some crazy spending spree. I think you'll see the Dodgers go out and make some moves as well, to really kind of bolster their chances and get up to the Cubs level, which they were very close to being at this year. So, but other than that, you mentioned the big ones. I think most intrigued about what they end up doing with Dexter Fowler, if they maybe overpay just a little bit just because they don't have great alternatives at the top of the order and end up paying him. The Cubs aren't hurting for money. They won't be, especially in a few years with the new stadium, all that stuff around, and the TV deal and everything like that.
So I would be fine with them overpaying Dexter Fowler.
I'm 100% yes. in for it. Yeah. 100%. I wasn't at the beginning of the year, but given the alternatives, not that Albert Almora is not going to be a fine player, but he doesn't – they really – like to see Fowler at the top of the lineup for the time being and use Almora in different ways and use him against tough lefties and shift him around. But I think you'll see a lot of trade speculation about a Jorge Soler. The Cubs are going to might be in the market for a backup catcher if they decide maybe that Miguel Montero might be DFA worthy. I love Miggy and kind of what he did, and he's a great guy, but for a backup catcher, you typically want those in theory to be pretty defensive minded. Mickey's arm's gone a little bit.
But I think he's back though, because of the $14 million. Yeah. I think he's your backup catcher next year, because Willie will catch most of the games.
Yeah. Willie will catch most. I'm interested to see what they do with the Schwarber standpoint.
Catch every couple weeks. I honestly don't think he's going to catch more than that, because I don't know if they're going to want to risk that with him. But I think Mickey's going to be back. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're just going to eat $14 million. I really don't. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you. Typically, the backup catcher is defensive-minded. Agreed. But I think for this particular team, you'd like to have a veteran guy, especially with the fact that Ross is going to be gone, that at least can help continue to mentor Contreras and maybe mentor Schwarber a little bit if he does have a catching role on the team next year. So I think he's back. I think he's definitely back. That's my opinion.
It's definitely possible. It's just something to think about. I'm sure that's crossed their minds to see if there's any other like vet backups they can get for a very cheap amount, where it's like, well, would you rather have Miggy at $14 million or so-and-so for $1 million plus Miggy's $14 million? So these are all questions. And then you mentioned the Montgomery. The Cubs might be in the market for another young, controllable starter, and maybe they ride Montgomery out in the bullpen for another year until John Lackey's out. It's just a lot of questions, but the core of this team, like you said, is obviously going to be around, and in theory, a lot of them are going to be better. Hopefully, Schwarber can stay healthy, and if he is, I mean, watch out in the middle of the order.
Oh,
you'll have
man.
Contreras for a full season, which we didn't have this year, and even a more mature Javi Baez and things of that nature. So you mentioned adding a couple of relievers. There's a couple of guys. I don't know if they're going to throw a book at like a Kenley Jansen, but there are a couple of decent relievers out there that the Cubs might be willing to add towards the middle back end of the bullpen. So, and we'll get into that as the offseason goes on, but you're right. It took me a while to actually give a darn about anything that was going to happen in the offseason. It was like, I couldn't believe how quickly some of these, like R.A. Dickey, I think, signed. And I was people already signing. They just won the dang thing like a week ago.
Right.
I guess we're really not used to being in it this late. But this honeymoon phase isn't going to wear off for a long time. Certainly at some point I'm going to start getting more interested in the winter meetings that have come around. I'm going to be totally invested like we always are. But for the time being, you just kind of enjoy it, man.
By the way, it turns out that John Lackey did come here for jewelry.
He did.
He did.
I saw that
his wife tweeted the picture of his haircut. But it turns out, despite the fact that he really didn't pitch well in the postseason, he got the jewelry.
He got the jewelry. And he, like you said, he didn't pitch all that great in the postseason at times, but he was a much better option in the back end of that bull playoff rotation than the Cubs had the year prior, because Hendricks wasn't as good, and Hamill had his second half struggles in 2015. So he was great all year. We got another year left in him, but he came for the jewelry, and he got it, baby.
he absolutely did. And I mean, I still, every time, I'm sure you're like this, every time I say world champion Chicago Cubs, or I say the Cubs won the World Series, I just smile. I just like saying it. It just feels damn good to say it. It's just great.
We're nuts.
It's true. But it's true.
On the Metro tonight, I'm sitting there just listening to music, and I just out of nowhere decide, you know, I'm going to pull up Pat Hughes' final call. Just do it. Why not? Right.
Yeah.
And listen to like five more times. Like, I mean, like I don't feel bad saying that. Like it's 8 days later since it happened, and I still get a crazy smile on my face, and it's still like it re-registers every time I play it. Like this actually happened, and like you said, I just get this biggest grin on your face when it happens.
Oh yeah, and I thought Pat's call was great. I thought Joe Buck's call was really great too.
I thought they were both fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
the final calls were just, like, they give me goosebumps every time I listen to both of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of them really captured the moment. I loved when Pat said, you know, the longest drought in American professional sports is over. And and I loved how he ended the call by saying, and the celebration begins. Because that's really what this is. This is celebrating something that was a long time coming, too long, but finally happens. The Cubs win the World Series. And, you know, it was funny when you were talking about at the beginning of the podcast how – when we started our podcast in 2010, that the biggest moment that season was Starlin Castro's promotion to the majors in Cincinnati. Plus. And now look at how far they've come. 6 years later, they're World Series champions and primed for many years of great playing. It's just awesome, and it's so exciting. And I'm glad that you and I got to share this ride together and talk about it every week, because this is what it's about. I mean, you and I met in 2007, right? You know, working at WGN, talking about and covering the Cubs from the studio as interns. And, you know, that's I thought about this after they won, and this sounds so sappy, but I think about the number of connections and friendships that I have because of the Cubs. And there's just so many of them. And I think you and I became friends not only because we worked together, but because we were both huge Cubs fans. And, you know, it's just – and, you know, I just think that there's so many people like us who have so many close family or friendship connections that they've made over the course of time because of sports or because of a team or because of some common thing. And I think for us it was always about being fans of this team and being as invested as we were – and it's finally all paid off. Our investment paid off. And, you know, just the idea that they're winners now, that we can't say that's so Cub, or, you know, that we can't make sarcastic jokes anymore
cubes.
About that. Because, right, because no more cubes. Cubes is over. It's over. I mean, we're winners now. And it's a really damn good feeling.
Mm-hmm. It really is. And I mean, it was everything. We talked about it at length, obviously, and we're going to continue to ride out this this high for a while. And it was like you said, it was a pleasure to share this ride. And we kind of just randomly over the winter, like, why don't we just like give it a shot and do this podcast for fun? We weren't in it for, we had no agenda. We just wanted to have a good time doing it. Talk Cubs baseball. We probably would have been doing it anyway, just over the phone instead of in front of a microphone.
Right.
So,
I mean, you and I could have just talked about the Cubs with nobody listening. I would have been fine
believe
with that
it,
too.
We've had this conversation before, like over the years, just without recording it. And these conversations weekly, and it was fun to share the ride, and it's just the ultimate prize to say that we were able to have this podcast announced that the Chicago Cubs are the World Series champions.
Right. It's like our buddy Carmo, he says, sidewalk show. We could have done a sidewalk show and just, you know, talked about the Cubs to the random people that walked by, and we would have loved it. But the fact that anyone is listening is really, we appreciate everyone so much. And thank you for clicking on it. Thank you for downloading it. The people that I've heard from, whether it's on Twitter or, you know, people texting me and saying that they listen to it and that they enjoy it, or on Facebook. We really appreciate it because it's been such a great ride. And I don't know when our next podcast is going to be. It'll probably be if they make a big move at the winter meetings or potentially, you know, once spring training starts or even when the next season starts. But until we do another podcast, just continue to know and to say it proudly, the Cubs are world champions, because there is nothing really better than being able to say that. And honestly, Beto, I mean, think about it. Your daughter only had to suffer for 6 months before
waited
the Cubs,
her whole life for this.
Right. They won the World Series. And like, when I get married next year, it will be coming off the Cubs winning the World Series. I mean, I got engaged, the Cubs won the World Series, and then I'm going to get married to the most special woman in the world. And so I feel like I'm having a pretty good year. So I feel like you had a child.
Yeah.
You saw the Cubs win the World Series.
2016, huh?
2016 and 2017 are going to be pretty darn good for us. So I think that they've been pretty darn good. We are pretty lucky guys. So it's been great, and it was so much fun doing this with you. And one more time, tell people where they can find our podcast on Facebook.
Yeah, we'll put it on. You can search for it, the B Squared Show. We'll post the link to there, potentially on my personal account as well. But we've had that page going for a long time, and we'll keep it rolling with this podcast and into next season.
Yes, and you can find us on Twitter. He's at Brian Beto. I'm at Jordan Bernfield. Subscribe to us on iTunes so you can listen back maybe and hear what we were thinking as the season went along, and then our reflections on the storybook ending. The Chicago Cubs are 2016 World Series champions. Thank you to everyone that's listened and contacted us. Beto, thank you for doing this every week with me. I've had such a good time because, you know, it's like we get to catch up and talk Cubs. So it's a pleasure to do it with you, and we will talk again soon. And we thank you for listening once again to the final edition of the 2016 season podcast. Go Cubs. We'll talk to you next year to see if the Cubs can repeat as world champions.